Welcome to Leadership Bites with myself, your host, Guy Bloom. This is a leadership podcast where I have conversations with colleagues, I chat with guests, and sometimes they'll be just me talking. You can connect with me at livingbrave.com, and when you enjoy the episode, subscribe and please tell everyone. One day I'm going to try and live stream this and do one live. Let's see what disastrous results I can have. For all. So, Graham, it is absolutely fantastic to have you on this episode of Leadership Bites. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Guy. Brilliant to be here.
And listen, so I've been chasing you a little bit on LinkedIn. I saw one of your fantastic video clips that just hooked me in with the manner and the style of it. People will be able to look in the descriptions and see the website and get effect of that, but just really hooked me into what you are and what you're about. So I know who you are, but for those that don't, just a quick sense of who you are and what it is that you're focusing on and where your energy is.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much. Well, I'm Graham Hall, and I'm the strategy director of the Saturn Project, which is, it's a kind of collective, myself, a couple of colleagues, came together 3 years ago. We're all senior people and now living in and around Bristol. I live in deepest Somerset, actually. And we said, okay, let's build a new agency. What do we want it to be like? And this was around our kitchen table, and kind of looked at what we'd all done in the past, what other agencies were doing, and what I think was kind of an underlying, the elephant in the room sort of thing, which is that trust is falling out, or a lack of trust makes marketing so much more difficult because your potential audience is wary of you, or has seen through every device that we've played out over the last 20, 30 years, you know, right back to Mad Men. And we're dealing with a much more sophisticated and sensitive and smarter audience. And actually, you know, we don't want to be perpetrating a kind of manipulation game. The what do they call that? The little egg cup game, where you're trying to distract somebody from thinking about one thing and wanting to buy the other thing.
So it's not a trick. There was a trick, or the science was in the bait and switch almost.
So we said, well, you know, we're all of a certain age. We don't need to jump through any more hoops. Let's see if we can build a marketing agency built on trust, on actually having genuine relationships with your audience. I mean, there are a few brands out there that do this and they're hugely successful. Let's find out what that X factor is and start building it into the process. So that's where we came up with the Saturn Project, which is essentially to explore that that concept. And ultimately, we built out this idea of trustonomics, which is essentially the management of trust, a kind of logical process through which you build trust into your business. And that's where we are now.
I'm particularly fascinated by trust, and this is why I think I hooked into where you were coming from. Due to the fact that I focus on leadership development, so I work with leaders as individuals, as teams, and cultures. And trust is one of the key tenets. And I never say this. I'm going to say it on this podcast. But when I say, and in my book, I never say that normally. So I'm not dropping that in as a marketing thing. But the four components of my book are trust, accountability, bravery, and connection. And so I think that's what hooked me into you straight away was this concept of, you know, why trust is so important. And I do remember seeing a film. And I was just trying to look it up there for a second. And I don't know if it was Dustin Hoffman, but he was an advertiser that told the truth about everything.
Yeah, that was probably Crazy People with Dudley Moore, you're thinking.
Maybe it was Dudley Moore. Yes, I remember a short fellow with hair. There you go. So it was Dudley Moore. That's it. And he just, you know, Volvos, boxy but safe. I remember that as being one of the, and it took off because people just, oh, I can trust that.
Yeah, Porsches, men with very small penises.
Exactly. But and I think there's something there. And we've entered into an age that you'll know as much as I do, the Edelman Trust Barometer, that kind of that lack of fundamental trust, be it commercially, be it spiritually, be it from charities, non-profits, etc. This sense of course, there are good people in those places doing good things. But with this social media algorithm just feeding us this kind of negative truth, where, you know, there's probably no worse stuff going on now that ever has done. It's just the fact that we're fundamentally aware of it 3 minutes after it happens.
I would argue that we are more transparent now. There's more opportunity to be transparent, to understand what brands are about. And that's actually one of our precepts is, why fight it? Because ultimately, customers, consumers, target audience, people are capable of finding out what you're up to. So it's probably best to come clean and start being honest rather than pretending you're not doing these things under the table. So if you work from that precept, everything else starts to fall into place.
So I'm super alert to my relationship with Apple, and I was an Apple fanboy. You know, it just works. It's fantastic. It's great. There were a couple of things that bugged me about it because there's no perfect product, but in essence, I was all in. And it was probably I'm 51 now, so maybe 3 or 4 years ago, three or whatever it was, I came off Apple and went to Android. And the only reason I came off it was I fell out of love with them. And it is the first time I have ever not consciously not trusted the intent of an organization. And I thought, at my age, that's the first time it's ever happened.
Yeah. I went through exactly the same process. I remember very clearly thinking, maybe I'm being hoodwinked. Maybe I'm putting too much faith into Apple and they've got me within their universe and I can't feel the edges anymore. So I and jobs had gone, and it seemed to be becoming much more of just a money-making exercise rather than something that had a different agenda, something about improving life or something. And I went to Android as well, and it was a very painful experience.
Oh God, it was horrific at first.
Ultimately, it kind of worked, but in the end, I went back to Apple. But I felt as though I'd explored. And I no longer feel quite the same attachment to Apple. I don't think they've ever quite got back to what they were about.
It was interesting because I felt trapped. My music's in your ecosystem, and even though I've paid for it, I can't get it out. So I shifted over to Spotify so I wouldn't be trapped by that in some respects. And it was hugely painful because once you've broken it, you're out. But I think I noticed, you know, when the battery throttling happened, when I was reading about the taxi, and they stuck with, they doubled down on it. Oh no, we're just trying to help you.
Yeah.
If you, and even little things like the pen on the iPad, where you had to plug it in at the bottom, and it stuck out like a spear. And I remember thinking, if Mr. Cook had seen that, he'd have gone, well, we're not doing that. Why? Well, it looks rubbish, and that would have been the end of it. You know, so I just felt this change. But that trust, do I trust that it's a product that works? Yes, but have I lost my trust in them? And I flipping well did.
My relationship. I mean, I'm talking to you now on this lovely little MacBook Air, which I've had for about 5 years. And I was thinking the other day, you know, this thing is delivering on its promise. They seem to me to have stopped doing quite what they were doing before, which was making everything redundant. This is still going. It can still get updated. It's not got built-in obsolescence in the way that they seem to used to do. And I think, hats off to you. And I haven't had to buy another computer as a result of that. So they've lost trade in that respect. But on another level, I do feel more comfortable with them. I think they are perhaps... I'm feeling less angst or questioning that relationship. And I think that's actually a very good microcosm of what we're talking about. And I think one of the things that I have to say about Trustonomics is, ultimately, it's not about making as much money as you possibly can. Trust and making money off somebody are kind of mutually exclusive. Because there has to be a mutuality. It's a two-way relationship.
Yes.
And that is not a free market economic model that works. So there are some very interesting questions and dilemmas to be grappled with if you want to have a look at what trustonomics is about.
So you can, I mean, what I like about that is that you can get trust back. You can say, as an organization, now, whether or not it's triggered by a commercial imperative, we could have that debate until, you know, the cows come home, you know. But the reality is we can look at ourselves and go, this doesn't fly anymore. You know, they used to be build the product and sell it. Now it might be, well, does the customer need this product before we try and sell it? It's these kind of things. And we can go, well, actually, if we get it right, we can make a lot of money. Yeah, and that's called ethics, and that's maybe why I trust you. So the sense of trustonomics in what you're, you know, that elevator pitch, that point where somebody goes, so Graham, this trustonomics stuff then, you know, what's the essence of it? How would you offer that to maybe somebody that's not in the game or doesn't think about it like somebody like you and I might do every day because that's all we think about?
Yeah. Well, I would say that I believe that, you know, it's not because of us defining it as trustonomics, but the world is moving in a direction in which consumers, people who want to buy things, are looking for products that reflect who they are and their values. And they're capable of auditing that more thoroughly. And so my point would be, why fight it? Go with the flow, and ultimately you will discover that you make more money, your brand will be more valuable. And I'm not saying this off the top of my head, all of the facts and figures are there that show that trusted brands are more valuable, that your marketing works better, your customers are more loyal, they pay more for your products, you know, the stock market reflects far higher levels of value for trusted brands. I mean, brands, it's very interesting just about how, you know, the cap value of brands is far higher for trusted brands. I mean, a brand in itself is 70-80% invisible assets anyway,
yeah.
So intangible assets anyway. So all of which, if you get down to the fundamentals, a brand is only a promise. A brand, you know, in the early days, a brand was just something you put on a piece of a cattle or a watch or something to show that it was authentic. It came from a genuine place. And it's so that in itself is just a promise. And I'm going off on one now.
No, that's why you're on that's why you're here.
But, you know, trust, you have to have trust in that promise. And how do you build trust? You keep delivering on your promises. You say you're going to do something and then you do it. It's not rocket science. Actually putting that into practice in a big organization takes a lot of management and vision and understanding of why you're doing it. But once you've got those pieces in place, you can start to build trusted brands and the benefits. The thing about trustonomics is there is an economic argument for it. So it's not as I'm just being airy-fairy and ethical, etc. You can be a hard-nosed, you know, free market economist, actually, and realise it works to build trust.
I'm fascinated by this. I had Gary Ridge on the episode, a couple of weeks ago. And so Gary Ridge, MD of WD-40, well worth a listen to. And this is a man who he's steeped in servant leadership. He had took WD-40 from a market cap of 300 million to 3.5 billion, as you do. Now, of course, great product. I mean, you know, everybody has a can of WD-40 probably, you know, somewhere in their house. But that, to me, he talks about tribe. We are a tribe. He talks about, well, there aren't really management positions. I mean, they are, but in essence, we're coaches. He talks, et cetera. And so this whole piece of, oh, you are a living embodiment of what this is. And he talked rather magnificently about, and I'm going to paraphrase this wrongly because I can't remember it exactly, but he talked about one of our key values is creating lasting moments of value. and being in a meeting with somebody, for example, and their behavior was out of order, and taking them outside and going, hey, you know, that wasn't a situation where you were creating positive memories for people. You were actually taking from the room. And you're listening to this and you go, wow, this is this hard-nosed, commercial, no-nonsense individual who has created what some people might go, oh, servant leadership or trust or having genuine conversations. And you go, yeah. And each time I speak to somebody in the military, like when I had John Evans on, Major General John Evans, you know, General of Fort Knox, servant leadership. I mean, there's a guy that everybody's absolutely doing what they're told. I mean, they're standing, you know, yes, sir. Well, but he does it with gentleness. He does it with warmth. He does it with integrity. And I just think, yeah. And then you go into these commercial enterprises and you go, you know, there are people in these scenarios that are, you know, they can, you know, they're in charge of nuclear warheads or whatever it is. And they're doing it from a place of integrity and transparency and et cetera. So I buy into that, that what you said, that it is not being weak. Actually, there's a strength in there if you're willing to go there.
And most of what we're talking about is understanding. It's not a small commitment. You need to understand why you're going to do it in the first place. And the last piece I didn't mention about the benefits is that you feel better anyway as a human being in a business that's doing that. Mm. You're not just going to work as a wage slave. I don't want to put anybody down, but you know, there's a genuine belief and a desire, and employees within trusted brands are so much more effective. There's less churn as well. There's lots of good, you know, just productivity, logistics reasons why it works. It works throughout the business. The nearest similarity I would suggest is total quality management, you know, Deming stuff back in the day when they were making American cars like the Japanese made cars, you know, things didn't break down. Through applying a culture, total quality management, this is total trust management. It's about the culture of the business, all realizing what the purpose of the business is. And I think there's a place that comes out the other side of there where, you know, society gets better. We stop being as suspicious of one another and less cynical. It can be done. And as I say, I think it still boils down to solid economic arguments.
So I've got this thing that I talk about, which is, you know, let's get rid of corporate social responsibility and just have the word social responsibility. You know, and because, you know, corporate social responsibility to me is a get out of jail free card of, you know, this is, you know, we go and paint the car park blue in a local school once a year or something. I'm like, well, whatever. So almost tick, done. And I'm much more interested in the inherent impact that if you've got 1,000 employees, they go home and they interact in a 12-month period with 10 people in close proximity, and they react with 10. I mean, do the maths, right? Mm-hmm. So we're all of these companies, everybody goes home and interacts with at least 10 people. Yes. So I'm interested in, I think, what that nature of, we start to validate ourselves, not through the overt demonstration of, hey, we give money to a local charity, and actually let's look at our employee engagement, let's look at our staff churn, let's look at it slightly differently. Perhaps that's what I'm hearing in what you're saying, Graham.
Yeah. And I think it's you know, I think about these things and I have to go, is there such a thing as holistic management? And I'll go onto Wikipedia, oh yes, holistic management, there's an entire school of thought that embodies that and has thought it through carefully. So really I think one of the side effects of where we're heading is that marketing per se is becoming less, you know, the old ideas of marketing are becoming less effective and less, they permeate our lives less. Mm. But we are becoming more intimately involved with the things that we choose to do. It's a more conscious decisions that we're making about which brands we want to align with and buy. Some are not important, and that's fine. You can also have a trusted brand that's not that vital to your life. You just want it to do the job it's supposed to do. Like maybe WD-40 is a really great example. It does this in superb job. All and you time. Trust you don't need You don't need it to be the answer to all of your life's problems or even pretend that it can solve
it. It delivers on its promise.
If it just does what it's supposed to do, that's a lot of what life is about. It's about keeping your promises.
So I'm interested then in, as a marketing kind of approach, for me, I'm coming at it from that leader culture approach. And I'm wondering how much of then the, I don't know if I'm going to say this correctly, but that connection between, in a perfect world, the culture would be representative of the brand.
Yes.
So I work with Method and Ecova, which is part of the SC Johnson group. And Method and Ecova is a very specific brand around no chemicals in their cleaning stuff, etc. And when I'm working with the senior team and I'm working with the people in there, you absolutely see that's what they're about. You know, so they are. Oh, you are. Oh, right. It's like if the bottle was a person, it would be you. But I then look at some, you know, larger commercial enterprises where it is in the marketing, and it's not lived in the environment. And I don't necessarily know if that's a bad thing, because no, we've got a large set of products and we can't be all things to all people. But I wonder where you see the connection, or what it is about what has to be true in the environment for it to manifest in the product or the service, because the product or the service could be great, but none of you buggers are like that. And I just wonder, because then can I trust it? The product and the service is great, but I don't know if any of you so-and-sos are, or no, there has to be a joining. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think that I've been watching very carefully Unilever's approach to, you know, getting their house in order. And for a long time, I've been saying this is virtue signaling, this isn't real. And, you know, I've worked with Unilever in the past, and, you know, they're like every other huge conglomerate with thousands of brands. However, it's been a kind of glacial progression towards me giving them more space. Adam Jope last week was on the radio. They made a big promise to provide a living wage for everybody, ensure that all of their suppliers provided their employees with a living wage by 2030, I think it is. So we can then audit whether that's true or not. But I think the intention is there, and these super tankers take a shit long time to move, to change direction. Yeah. So I'm much more willing to give them space. If they, I nearly said a bad word there, but if they screw up, then, you know, rather like the Apple incident, they will be relegated to the bottom of my list of brands that I personally might want to buy. I think Keith Weed came before Adam. Keith was the marketing manager and introduced, you know, and went on to introduce the advertising standards drive for greater trust. The intention has been there, is essentially what I'm saying, and they are moving towards it. I think there will always be opportunities to criticise, but I would ask that we don't all be cynical about these things. The first step in changing something is recognising the problem, and I think that they're starting to do that. BlackRock this week there's an awful lot of talk about stakeholder economics now, and BlackRock, the world's biggest investor, is driving a program. Now, it's very easy to suggest that this is a cynical operation, but it needs to start somewhere. And if we can start holding to account, there will be change. I think one of the things that I would like to say about all of what we're doing is that we must give a much greater perspective of time. Things have changed for the better since the 19th century, when advertising first came along, and Coca-Cola had you know, cocaine in it. The Advertising Standards Authority, the advertising standards only really came into effect in 1968, where you had to be truthful, honest, and decent. You know, there is progress. The whole of Trump, the Trump era, fake news, was a symptom of people saying, I'm not being given enough transparency, and Trump promised that. Whether, you know, I think we realised perhaps that that was another ruse, but I personally believe that we are getting smarter all along, and we're now in a point where ecological disaster is on our doorstep. We're starting to take these questions very seriously, opening up a whole bunch of other issues, such as trustonomics. You know, we're just a symptom. What we're doing here is just a symptom of a society starting to ask more questions.
I noticed BP have said they want to be net zero on carbon by 2050 or sooner. And so, you know, it's interesting that you say you've got to give these people space. And you've got to give trust that there is, because BP can't go net zero by Friday of this week. You know, it just is. I was going to say a super tanker, but obviously, you know, bad analogy. But it is this behemoth that, you know, it takes time. So there's something there about when organizations that are global, proper global entities, are saying, right, that is a overt statement. It's on our website. Like all things, it can change, but you can't really pull back off that, not very easily.
I honestly believe that humankind is becoming more capable of auditing itself. And what we're talking about within the marketing part of that whole ecosystem is it's beginning to realize that they can't pull. Well, it's really simple. We're realizing that it's better to tell the truth than to pretend otherwise, to try and manipulate, to try and, gaslight or groom, which are horrible things to say, but ultimately that's been the driving intention of marketing over the last 100 years, was to kind of groom people, to get them to do something for you.
Yes, it's the covert manner of our approach. It's the subliminal, and we'll hook people in, and it's the language, which is fascinating. Or what's the difference between influence and manipulation? And I think it's the intention.
Yeah, they're all the hidden manipulators, the hidden persuaders.
Yeah,
they're trying to get you to do something, and all of this talk about trust and truth, etc., has to really realize it's not a tactic to get you to do, I'll be more trustful in order to get you to do something. That's manipulation.
Yes.
It's, for me, it feels as though I'm being a heretic even to say this. But what I'm saying, I would suggest, is blatantly obvious to anybody who wasn't so entangled within this marketing construct. When you step outside, you wouldn't treat your parents, you wouldn't try and sell your wife or your parents something that you didn't inherently believe was truthful. Why do we do it to people we don't know?
Well, I'm fascinated, again, if I just look at Volkswagen and the emissions and things like that. You know, you think, well, I imagine that most people in that organization are good people, because most of the time, 99.9% of the people I meet in organizations are good people. There's the odd nutter, but that's just the distribution curve of, you know, X amount percent of the population are sociopaths or whatever you want to say. And so guess what? But taking that out of the equation, most people are good. And then you get this kind of falsification of emissions. And you get a CEO that goes, well, I wasn't aware of it. Well, which means you're either incompetent for not knowing, or you did know, but you kept it a long way away from you, you know, just like the mafia boss.
Yeah.
But it's about this speaking truth to power. It's that willingness to say, actually, this is taking us down the wrong path, which comes to fear. So I think I'm interested in when somebody works with you and you know, the Saturn project, and are you talking to people from that sense of culturally you have to be of a type, you have to be willing to move into a space that allows certain things to be true, Or are you going, well, that might be true, but that's not our, that's not where we work. We work with you on presuming that you are either there or you're moving there of your own volition in it with a different provider. We will work with you on bringing that to life as an external truth for people so they can see what you're about. So why would I engage with you? Why would I reach out to Graham and the team and go, I want you to come and talk to us?
One of our, in a way, we've sidestepped that question because we realise there's probably only 95, there's only 5% of potential audience out there who would actually be interested in what we're talking about. But that 5% would make our lives very happy, and we would enjoy working with those people. We've been approached by an enormous pharmaceutical organisation, which is one of the least trusted industries. Just above advertising and marketing, which is at the bottom, by the way. So there are, the intention is there. And as I keep saying, you can make a very good economic argument for wanting to do this. And if you can see beyond a 5-year horizon, this starts to make an awful lot of sense. So whether those people are, whether we can then, let's say you're a horribly cynical, money-driven CEO, and you are interested in this concept of trust because you can make an economic argument out of it. I don't know whether we could ever change that person into somebody who feels it and loves it and gets it and wants to be it. I don't know if I can do that. it would be an interesting exercise to try. We're more likely to be picking up clients who have a sense of, oh, I've never expressed it, but I've always believed that if I was just more honest with people, they would like me more and buy more of my things. It's not such a radical idea. And there's a lot of people out there, and it's a growing band of people. We thought it was 5%. We think there's a lot more people like this now.
So this is something about finding the people that almost like you're turning the lighthouse light on and saying, listen. The
same things that haven't been said.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that in any way as some sort of crusader. It's just a matter of, it's Emperor's New Clothes. It's saying, look, guys, stop trying to manipulate people. A great example, an obvious example is, the energy firms. You can, if you're loyal to an energy company or a phone company, you are penalized. You have to be a new business. You have to be a new customer to get all the good stuff. Now, in what world does that make any sense? No. In what world is that a good way of looking after your customers? But we take it as for granted that that's how it works. Well, no, it needn't work like that.
Well, it's the sales line that they answer within one. I bought a Lenovo ThinkPad.
Yeah.
And the thing's an aberration, frankly. I mean, it's very fast, but it's noisy. It doesn't really fulfill its promise. So I'm deeply disappointed with it. Now, you ring the sales line, boom. And the answer is almost immediate. And you couldn't speak to more pleasant and engaging human beings. Good luck when you try and get through to the technical team.
Yeah.
And then when you do, if you're lucky, of course, you get the right person who's got a good attitude. But there's a level of dismissiveness. And then I was able to use LinkedIn, the power of LinkedIn, to speak to somebody very senior who put me through to an engineer who was absolutely fantastic and super helpful. But it's the trust of your aftercare doesn't match your hook, the who you are. And I've just had a leaky roof this morning, and we had one guy repair one part of the roof. I said, hey, it's still a bit of a leak. He never called me back and never came back. So of course I don't trust him, of course. And anybody that says his name, I'll go, no. The other guy, he just came. It rained like heck last night. They hadn't quite finished. It came through, and he's been all over it like a rash. So what I think about trust is it doesn't even need you to be perfect. It needs you to be accountable. It needs you to do certain things that says this isn't about having the perfect product, the perfect service. It's about – so I guess in the way that working with you, is there then something about it goes beyond the product? It goes to the end-to-end experience of you So it matches the promise.
It's that total
CX experience, that customer service experience.
That total quality management approach. It's the entire culture of the business. It's the orientation. It's the idea that everybody on the, let's say total quality management, everybody on the production line building that car realizes that the screw that they're putting on is interconnected with everything else in that business. And that it's not a hierarchical organization. Everybody is responsible for what's going on there. And they are all playing their part. Some businesses do it really, really well. And others, you know, they just don't get it. They don't see the financial benefits to invest in it, and then there is an awful lot of lip service paid to it. But I do believe that we are getting better. Businesses are becoming more conscious of the value of it.
So the work that organisations do with you, Graham, and the team, what is it that I would? What's that end-to-end solution that you're offering that would say, okay, if we get these guys in, the essence of what would probably happen would look and feel like this? What's that sort of journey?
I almost don't want to say it, but there is obviously the kickoff workshop in which we spend, you know, the best part of the week exploring what trust is and how the value of it and why you should get on board. And then there, you know, we are essentially the front end of a whole raft of suppliers who can help externally and people such as yourself come in internally and drive it through the business, drive these concepts, these ideas through the business, and then externally through marketing teams, which we may or may not be experts at ourselves, digital management, etc. Who also understand them, you know, that we are all on the same wavelength. We all understand what it is that we're trying to do. And there is zero, you know, there's zero grey areas where we question, but we could, if we did it this way, we could make a bit more money short term. Well, no, there's a kind of, I don't know, it's much more of a cultural reorientation of the business at every touch point, not even internally and externally. It's a philosophy more than anything. There is no great secret to what, there's no great secret to any of it. It's just a desire to see the benefits and then work with teams such as ourselves to make it happen. I think B Corp do a good job in terms of, it's a great example of how you can apply a process and audit that process and work with the team, because what we can also measure the level of trust in a business, and then work on how to do the good things that were working, iron out the things that aren't working, and move forward, and then re-evaluate how are we doing. So there is a process. Right. But ultimately, it's about this end-to-end understanding of the value of it and why it's worth it and how every part of your business benefits if you get on board with it. And it's not just financial. It's about your own well-being, it's your own sense of value, these sorts of issues, which are important.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I do notice that on the front page of the website, it's got, we admit it sounds like gobbledygook, but we think it's the future of business. So I do, it's the-saturn-project.com, and I'll put it in the description for the podcast as well. So I think normally, very often, I do find out more about people, Graham, but this has just been, I've been hooked into the conversation. So we took a slightly different slant with this.
Can I just say, though?
Yeah.
You perhaps hooked into it because we don't own this. Trust is not something that we...
No, I talk about it. Lots of people talk about it.
We're just And... But it's within all of us, I think. We all want to be more like this. We all want to be more open, more authentic, more, you know, relaxed about who we are. Yes. And I think that this is what comes out of getting away with, doing away with the kind of artifice, becoming more authentic.
So I've got this in my head as, I think I like, for things to make sense to people, just like a product, like a service, it has to, I mean, a watch is a watch, but why do I value one watch more than the other? Because I buy into the look of it. I buy into the feel of it. I buy into the what it stands for and what it represents. And that is, you know, so all of these things. So, yeah, I don't think I've said anything ever that's fundamentally not been said. It's just that you might like it the way I say it as to the way somebody else says it, and vice versa. But yeah. I'm buying into this idea of trust, of coming to you as that home and that conduit and that facilitator of, we as an organization, if you have always thought it to be true, or you're on the path already, or you want to bring that challenge into your team or your organization, and you want to work with a group of people that will bring you that insight, bring you that learning, bring you that catalyst, and then facilitate you through to the end game, then I can come and speak to you.
Yeah.
I think that's what I've heard. You know, I'll get myself on a day rate. There we go. So listen, Graham, I'm going to bring us to a close. It's been really, really interesting. And I do appreciate it. Also with the fact that I sent you a diary invite with no link in and hadn't even confirmed the call with you. So the fact that my diary management completely failed and you brilliantly made yourself available, I appreciate.
I trust you though, you see. I kind of get who you are. You're not just...
the brand,
manipulate people.
No, the brand is there. So for me to you, Graham, I'm going to call this to a close. I'll press the stop button, but we'll keep talking. But on that note, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks very much indeed.
Cheers. That's it. So I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please share so others get to hear about us, and subscribe so you keep up to date on new episodes. Also visit livingbrave.com if you want to connect with me and find out more about executive coaching, team effectiveness, and changing culture. Oh, and of course, you can buy my book, Living Brave Leadership, on Amazon. So on that note, see you soon.